good, the bad, and the ugly of professional wrestling go under the spotlight once more here on Earning the Push as we break down a week that saw a legitimate match of the decade contender, two new world champions crowned, a big NXT announcement, and loads more. And we're here to talk about it all. My name is Jack Murley, professional broadcaster, alongside professional rugby player Charlie Beckett. It was lovely to be back last week, Charlie. We're back again this week, and how are we?
We are back, and when you see this visually on social media, I promise you I am here. We have had some technical issues with my camera today, and I look like, Jack said, it looks like he's seeing me through cataracts. I am very, very blurry, but I promise you I am back, and I am here, and I'm excited to talk about some professional wrestling again.
Yeah, most people will listen to us, but for those who consume the social content, Charlie does look like he has managed to blur himself entirely, and we don't quite know why. And Charlie is the most mild-mannered man I know and an absolute gent, but when there are technical problems, you see the dark side emerge. It's like the demon within Finn Balor comes out.
I lose all sense of patience and keeping my cool. I hate technology. I wish I didn't have to use it, and I hate when it doesn't work. I do the same thing on this laptop every week. Why is it not working today?
The best thing about it, and I know we will get into the wrestling in a minute, but the best thing was when the camera was going in and out, it absolutely had vibes of The Undertaker arriving, because it would flicker in and out. It would suddenly go all blurry and then go black. And my God, it just needed the gong to go with it.
Well, now you've made me want this every week. Now you tell me I look like The Undertaker, so I'm all on board now.
I don't think that was what I was saying, but if you want to hear that, if that's what you want, that's fine. Right, let's crack on with it. Here's Charlie_Beckett. I'm Jack_Murley. We've got a new Women's World Champion to talk about. We've got a brutal beatdown on Kevin Owens. We're going to do a little bit about body shaming in the ugly section. And is Dom preparing to stray away from Mami while Rhea is away? All coming up on the pod, but we have to start with AEW Dynasty in St. Louis this past Sunday, and my God, the card on paper looked good. Didn't it just deliver? There's only one place to begin with. Will Ospreay and Brian Danielson put on a match for the ages. The bar was set extraordinarily high, and they leapt over it with inches to spare.
Yeah, it's so tough when you have legitimate dream matches that have such high expectations going into them. It's so hard to deliver. Think of Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles at WrestleMania. Like, it is hard to deliver on these levels of hype, and these two men absolutely did. What an incredible, incredible match. Just so hard-hitting, so technical, just brilliant from bell to bell.
We've said for the past few AEW pay-per-views, I think, because look, money's tight and it's not easy for people to get hold of things. Do we have to watch it? Do we have to? And we've actually gone, I don't know if we have to watch it. I think we can probably just read the spoilers. I had to see this match. I had to shell out my hard-earned money, not cheap, about 25 quid, I think it was, to get the pay-per-view. And that match alone is one you will go back to and watch again and again. It is a microcosm of perfect professional wrestling.
Yeah, it's two of the absolute best doing what they do best. It's as simple as that. It was just a phenomenal match. Like I say, there wasn't too much story coming into it, but you didn't need it for this. This was just, we're both really, really good at wrestling. Let's have a wrestling match. And it was just excellent. I loved it. And Bryan Danielson, man, I know he's talking about stepping away at the end of the year and going more part-time. And he is allowed to do whatever he wants. But my God, he's still so good. Like, so good.
It was 2014, 10 years ago, WrestleMania 30, obviously. This was about the time that news was beginning to come out where you're going, is he injured? Is he going to have to relinquish the title? And then we got that horrible run where he was back and you're excited. And then he couldn't go anymore. And he stepped away and he was GM and we thought that was it. This second half of Bryan Danielson's career has been sensational. And the fact he can hang at the top level with a guy like Ospreay, huge testament to him.
Yeah, you look at what he's done since he's come back. Came back, won the WWE Championship, main evented WrestleMania, then decided that's me done in WWE, left with all the will in the world, all the goodwill in the world, probably because he wanted to spend more time with his family, and it seems that the AEW schedule, you can do that, and has gone into AEW, become the leader in that locker room, and absolutely putting on match of the year, match of the decade candidates, pretty much every time he laces up his boots. It's been one hell of a renaissance and incredible second half of his career. I'm going to ask you a question that's going to make you go, ooh, you should have run that by me beforehand. Whose return from injury and second half of career is more impressive, Bryan Danielson or Shawn Michaels?
Shawn Michaels is Bryan Danielson's idol. So the fact they're even in that same conversation, I think, is huge. You know, it's Regal and Michaels. Can you tell I'm stalling for time as I try and think this one through? I do think it's Shawn Michaels. I do think it's Shawn Michaels because do you know what I think is? I think I was less educated as a fan. I didn't really know as much when Shawn Michaels came back, so I was more invested in him from just a pure, oh, wow, what an athlete. And he did have banger after banger after banger when he came back. But if someone wants to flip that round and say it has to be Danielson, I'm not going to disagree. I mean, you look at Danielson in AEW, the matches he's had with Hangman Page, like, again and again, had five-star matches. MJF, that Iron Man match, was a five-star match. This with Ospreay, five-star match. Kenny Omega at that first Grand Slam event when AEW was red hot. You know, that was, if it wasn't five stars, it was as near as damn it. Has he had a bad AEW match? Can you think of one?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of a bad AEW match or AEW pitch that Danielson's had. I think the thing with Shawn that was always the most surprising was his change in attitude. Now, it's a test with Danielson. He didn't need to have a change in attitude. He wasn't the rotten egg that Shawn Michaels was. But that's almost even more impressive that Shawn came back with a different sort of attitude. And probably Shawn wrestled more than Danielson has since coming back. So, but they're two incredible stories, incredible careers that even if both of them had finished at the end of when they got injured, they would both be all-time Hall of Fame careers. But also, if they'd only started after the injury, they'd also be all-time Hall of Fame careers. So that just shows the level that both these men are working at.
And it's a weird one with Will Ospreay because obviously the AEW audience is so educated. Lots of folks will have seen him in New Japan doing what he does there, maybe in Rev Pro on the UK scene as well. However, for him to be having these matches on the American scene with an audience that may not know as much about what he's doing, he is just carrying himself like the guy, like the absolute man in AEW. And I know Swerve Strickland is the man now, which we'll talk about a little bit later, but Ospreay has just taken the load of this company, put it on his back and said, let me take you forward, lads. Where does he go next? If you're Tony Khan and you're looking to book this, where are you going?
I don't think you can keep him away from the world title scene too long. He's so hot. He's so such a draw at the moment. And he's just had this incredible match with Danielson. If Kenny Omega was around, I would go towards Kenny Omega because I'd just be like, let's transition this man into another world-class match. And there's no one who's going to provide one like that except for Kenny Omega. That's not an option, unfortunately. So I would be very tempted to... God, I wish Adam Cole was fit. God, I wish we could see Adam Cole with Ospreay. Imagine that as a match. If MJF is looking at coming back soon, I would quite enjoy MJF to come straight back into a feud with Will Ospreay. I think that could be brilliant. But if none of those are options that you can pick up, I think I'd chuck him straight in with Swerve. Now, that's tough because you don't want to have Will Ospreay start losing and also you don't have Swerve lose. But there's got to be a way where you make them both come out looking better and really solidify Will Ospreay as top level talent in the company.
This is my quandary, and it's a lovely problem to have. I don't think you can put Swerve and Will Ospreay together yet because they're both too hot. I just think one will lose in losing to the other.
Yeah,
they need to be kept apart. And then you look at the rest of that roster and you think, well, who else is there? I know he looks like he's going to be going into something with a House of Black, but I would be looking to put Ospreay and Adam Copeland together. Because
yeah,
that,
I absolutely see that.
You know, Copeland can lose to anyone because he's a Hall of Famer. Ospreay will hang with a guy like Copeland and take Copeland to the next level, not that Copeland needs to go to a higher level. And I just think if you want a dream match for Wembley, that could be it. And if it's not going to be the world title match, it needs to be something like that for Will Ospreay. And I do think it seems bizarre to say it, I do think it would elevate Adam Copeland a little bit, who maybe is just getting a little bit lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, I absolutely see all of that. I think that would be a great place for him to land. Question, where is, you're more educated in AEW than me, where is Keith Lee at the moment? Because that's a match I'd like to see.
Your Keith Lee fandom knows no bounds.
Honestly, I love Keith Lee. He's so good at wrestling.
Couldn't tell you if he's still on the roster, couldn't tell you what he's doing, haven't seen him.
Because he was in the background shot at the Hall of Fame at one point, and everyone was like, ah, he's back. I do think, I genuinely, if he just walked through the shot in the background on that one, I think he was there with me and Yim. Oh, I can't remember her name at the moment. What's her? What's Mia Yim's name on telly at the moment?
It's escaped me as well. Sorry.
Yeah, she's Mia Yim. And obviously they're together, but I think it's hilarious if he did just walk through Triple H was like, leave it in. Just leave it in. Well, but no, I know Keith Lee's far from the most popular hot thing in AEW right now, but imagine the match him and Will Ospreay could put on.
You could put Will Ospreay in with me and get a 3-star match. You could put Will
3.5. 3.5, Jack.
You know, I've got some skills, but so that was sensational. Pac versus Okada was great. The ladder match was great as well. The return of Jack Perry, AEW pulling the trigger on Swerve Strickland as well. Which I like because he's organic, he's got hot on his own, and they've said, let's go with him. And why not? Like, the fans are right there with him.
Yeah, Swerve Strickland, I think, is excellent. He is one of the casualties, I think, of NXT 2.0 and that sort of tie of NXT of he landed in NXT at the exact wrong time for him. If he'd been a year or two earlier or now, you're seeing Swerve Strickland presented like Carmelo Hayes, like Trick Williams, like Dragunov. If he's earlier, you're seeing him positioned like Adam Cole, Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa, all this sort of stuff. He just landed NXT at the wrong time. But NXT's loss is AEW's game because you are seeing the absolute best of Swerve Strickland here. And he is phenomenal. In the ring, on the mic, he is world champion caliber, no doubt about it. And now he has a world championship to show that.
And they could have easily kept the belt on Joe. And Joe, you know, in terms of Mr. Steady the Ship, has done a sensational job because there was a time when AEW was looking very wobbly and he was that grit and that realism. And we're big Samoa Joe fans on this podcast. We always have been. For him to get a world title reign, not the longest, but probably pretty significant in AEW where they just needed a rock to rest the ship on.
Yeah, not the longest at all, but a very, very important, a very, very good one. I'm not sure there's anyone else who could have done what he's done in AEW. Had a short reign when the ship was beyond rocking. It was sinking. The ship was sinking. And to be a credible enough guy who's like, yeah, I'm the champ. Come on then. And to make that title feel important again. And there to be no circus around it. No, nothing outside the ring. Just a man being like, I'm the best wrestler. I am tougher than you. I am bigger. I am scarier than you. You can't beat me. It made the title feel important again.
So here we are talking about AEW first time out. It's had a tough time, AEW. We ripped into it last week for the CM Punk stuff. We stand by that. I've been saying to fans I know this week who have soured on AEW, you need to see this match, give it a chance, give this pay-per-view a go. Is AEW out of the doghouse yet with the fans who have soured on it?
No, and I think that show, but I think there was only about 7,000 people at the show at the weekend, which is a real low number for pay-per-view, especially that card. That card, if you can only get 7,000 people in, that's worrying. But what AEW, in my opinion, has done is lost the trust of the fans. And it takes a long time to build trust back. You can have a good show. You can have a good few weeks. But it takes a long time for us to trust that you're not going to throw out something wild like last week's footage again. So this is not, in my opinion, an easy fix for AEW. They need to be consistently good, as they've shown they can be and are. We know they can be good. Really, they can be brilliant. They've shown us multiple times. You've got to be brilliant to sell out Wembley. Let's not mess about with it. They can be brilliant. They've got to be good and better than good consistently for weeks and months to build the trust back and get the fan base back. Because if you're not, people just won't tune in because there's brilliant wrestling everywhere else.
Yeah, you have that 5,000-pound gorilla in the room with WWE. You need to... And we'll say it again, we really want AEW to succeed. It's great that there is a place that you can get 7,000 in. And I think they booked a smaller arena and it looked good and it sounded good. And you just hope they're on the upswing. And I will, you know, anytime Ospreay's in there with someone, I'm going to be there. Like, I was already a Will Ospreay fan. That match just solidifies it. He has become can't miss for me. So that's AEW. Let's talk about WWE, who made the best of a bad situation this week with a really good battle royal to crown Becky Lynch as the Women's World Champion after Rhea Ripley had to relinquish the title last time out, not messing around WWE and going to who they know. There were some boos in the audience. Did you pick those out when Becky eliminated Liv?
Yeah, I think a lot of people wanted Liv to win. The story's there with Liv. I think it feels like the safe bet going with Becky, because of course it does. But I read a lot of different posts on social media this week and I agree with it. I think the story is there. It'll be a bigger moment when Liv beats Becky one-on-one for the title rather than win a battle royal. So I absolutely see the story there with Liv. I think you build to Liv beating Becky at some point this summer.
I the thing was, I looked at that Battle Royal and I could see why people wanted something a bit different, but I don't quite understand this portion of the fan base that isn't into Becky Lynch at the moment. I don't get it. And maybe I'm missing something, but she's there week in, week out. She delivers in the ring. She's charismatic as hell. She was one of the sparks of the women's revolution. I don't understand why there's this portion of the audience that isn't quite there with her at the moment.
No, I don't understand it, Jack. It's classic wrestling fans. We're never happy, are we? We're never, ever, ever happy.
Well, she turned heel and they did the whole big time Bex. And everyone was like, oh no, bring back the Becky Lynch we like. And then they brought that back and everyone's like, I don't quite understand that. But WWE did a really good job of making that moment feel big. Like, hype the whole show, fireworks. I love the drama of it. I'm not a huge fan of Battle Royals, but I think that was an excellent way to do it.
Yeah, I thought it was handled as well as it could have been. And I like that we're just a week later, we've got a new champion. We're not messing about with a vacant title for 4 or 6 weeks, something like that. Let's just get it done. And we have. So I like that a lot.
And Tiffany Stratton on SmackDown, big week for women's division wrestling in WWE, because Tiffany Stratton comes out of the main event on SmackDown and says, this is my time, and she makes an impact as well. She is going to be a huge player for WWE this year. Would she be your Money in the Bank winner?
Ooh, I hadn't actually given the Money in the Bank men's or women's much thought. Mm. Off the top of my head, I can't see a better winner right now. But whatever happens, there's a rocket strapped to her because she is an absolute star. Her performance at Elimination Chamber was phenomenal. And the way that crowd was going berserk for her, you can tell they've got a genuine top tier star there, WWE.
They really have. Bloodline 2.0, another solid week for them as well. Brutal beatdown on Kevin Owens. They seem to imply that one of the Bloodline members, maybe Tama Tonga, maybe someone else, attempted to literally murder Kevin Owens by driving a car into him. We just sort of scrolled past that, but they are...
It's straight out of Rikishi's playbook. I did it for The Rock. We've been here before. The family have history with this. They have previous.
Do you think there's like when you're doing the old driving license test and you see that a member of the Fatu family's coming in and you're the instructor with your little clipboard just sitting there going, your father did drive a car into someone and now your cousin has as well. Can we just be careful, please?
Yeah, come on. The family have issues. You can't tell me they're both accidents.
Well, I tell you what, though. This is no accident, this Bloodline 2.0. Poor old Paul Heyman, just the most pathetic man in the world who has created a monster that he now can't control. And they're doing a masterful job of making Heyman sympathetic and Solo Sikoa an absolute beast.
Yeah, you've made your bed, Mr. Heyman. Now it's time to lie in it. Solo Sikoa is like a deranged young dictator, isn't he? And Paul Heyman is playing his part perfectly. Jacob Fatu, nope, wrong one. Tama Tonga looks like an absolute beast and unhinged and just destroying everyone. But the only person he listens to is Solo. When Jacob Fatu, there we go, joins, the rumours are in the next week or so. I think we might see him on SmackDown this weekend. It's going to just look like absolute rebellion from the younger members. I know Tama Tonga's not that young, but let's say he is. Members of the family, and I just love it. It's so soap drama. It's just so soapy, and I love it.
Do you know what? Solo Sikoa does give Kim Jong-un vibes.
Massively.
when you say, like, a young dictator. I was having a conversation with someone this week, and I was like, I love Bloodline 2.0, and they said to me, no, can't take Solo Sikoa seriously. He's not one match for however long. And I'm going, I see your point. I respect your opinion. I don't think it matters. Like, it doesn't matter.
No, I mean, I do see the point massively. Yeah. And especially when Solo's like, winning and losing have consequences. Like, Solo. So maybe WWE could do a slightly better job of not having him lose 34 matches in a row. However, would you want to get in a ring with him?
No.
Exactly. No. There it is. Neither would I.
And that is the point, isn't it? There is an irony of yes, arguably SmackDown's biggest loser pretending that he is the world's biggest winner. But he is a type of guy. This is what dictators do. If they tell you that the moon's made of cheese, then you go up there with a cracker and have some. Like that, you believe them. Before we get on to the bad of the wrestling week, you want to talk a little bit about Drew McIntyre. A, how good he is, but you've been speculating for a little while about possibly a summer of McIntyre.
Yeah, so I don't know if the reports on Drew's contract being up in the next 6 weeks are true. I don't know if they're kayfabe. I don't know what's going on. But I think whatever happens, we're going to be led to believe that his contract ends just around the time of Clash of the Castle in Glasgow. I could see a world where Drew wins the world title in the main event of Clash. And like we should have had in 2011 after Money in the Bank in Chicago, where Punk went off with the world with the WWE title. What we couldn't have then because of where WWE was is him working with other companies. That was never going to happen under 2011 Vince McMahon. Under 2024 Paul Levesque, I could absolutely see a world where Drew wins the world title, leaves with the world title, and we see him rock up in the Impact Zone with the WWE World Heavyweight title, where we see him rock up in Rev Pro, in Progress, in all these places and the UK Indies with the WWE World Heavyweight title. I could see a world where we have an interim world title or a new world championship brought into WWE that looked the same. And it would be quite poetic, wouldn't it, if CM Punk won that? And then we have a unification match at SummerSlam between Drew McIntyre and CM Punk. And I would trust the creator of this WWE to pull that off.
Yeah, and I can see it happen. There would have been a point you'd have said that and you go, no, never going to happen. Not in a million years, just jog on. You're right. This WWE, with the links they've made with other companies, with the way they've incorporated Impact footage into what they're doing, Impact wrestlers, the way Shinsuke going off to work with New Japan, you can sort of see it. And Drew is at another level right now. And you could trust Drew to pull that off realistically and just blur the lines enough that it would make it pretty damn exciting. So I'm here for it. I think it would be great.
Yeah, I just think it would be something we haven't seen since the days of the territories in like the 80s and 90s. We haven't seen anything like this for so long. And I think it's a unique opportunity to do it.
Well, you know when they did do it, not WWE, but when AEW and Impact paired up in the pandemic where Kenny Omega won the title and then pitched up in Impact. And that was exciting. That was like, oh, okay. And I know that expectations were different because we were all locked in our houses. But that worked. That worked well. So I'm here for that. Let's do the bad of wrestling this week. Here's a bad thing. It's going to end badly for Dominic Mysterio if he does the dirty on Rhea Ripley with Liv Morgan, which they seemed to be hinting at. While Mammy's away, Dom's going to play.
Yeah, and it's clever, isn't it? Liv's injured Rhea and now she's taking his man. Again, it's soap opera and I'm here for it. I think the Judgment Day are on the rocks a little bit in general at the moment.
Yeah, they are. Damian Priest wants to go his own way.
He can go his own way. Sorry. Sometimes I think, these intrusive thoughts that everyone just doesn't do. Sometimes I lose that battle, and that was one of them.
If you're here for Charlie's Fleetwood Mac tribute band, we'll be doing more at the end. I want more of the Judgment Day. I don't want them to break up. I thought they would be a dominant faction for a little while.
Agreed, and I do remember last year we were like, let Finn win the title, let's have him and Damian in the same faction with the world title and the Money in the Bank. You could still do that if Priest keeps hold of it with Finn Balor winning the Money in the Bank. You could still do that. Now, I don't think so, because I do think Damian Priest loses the title at Clash of the Castle, because I think if you don't have Drew McIntyre win the world title in Scotland, I think you're silly. I just think that's a silly thing not to do. That's things exciting is this world title scene, because of what's happened, even though it wasn't the plan, there are so many people who genuinely could win this title at any point.
Yeah, I think I just want them to stay together a bit more. I'm going to defer to you on this one because this isn't my area of expertise. If I was with Rhea Ripley, I would not be straying. I'd be like...
I don't do straying in general. I don't. That's a cool thing to do. But even if I was a strayer, I think Rhea Ripley would stop me straying. And that's all I'm going to say on the matter.
And there's Liv Morgan. But you just know, if they play this out right, and you've got to suspend the disbelief of course Rhea would just be looking at the TV screen and saying, right.
That's my favourite thing. It's being recorded on camera and put on international television.
She doesn't have to be Miss Marple to work it out. But if you put that to one side... Oh my God, she's going to come back such a big baby face anyway. And when
massive.
Can you imagine when the music hits and Liv Morgan and Dom are in the ring together about to, you know, the moment's going to happen, the whatever, and then her music, that is going to be sports entertainment gold dust.
100%.
Here's a bad thing that could be bad, could be good. We'll see how it works out. But announcement this week that NXT Battleground is going to be held at the UFC Apex. Now, if you don't know the UFC Apex, it's a production facility in, I think, Nevada. Holds about 500 people. The UFC did a lot of stuff there during the pandemic. I don't know what to make of this. You sent it to me. What do you think?
I don't know either. I don't know much about the Apex Center. I know a lot about the history of Battleground. Everyone who listens to this podcast knows my love for Battleground, so I'll be tuning in. 2016 Battleground.
Oh, right, no, here. I've taken us into this territory intentionally. Go on.
But I don't know. I think it's great to see UFC and WWE working together on a more visual level, rather than, we all know, TKO are the parent company of both. Like, I think it's cool to see them work together. I genuinely believe we are not too far away from having an event where there is a wrestling ring and there is an octagon and we are having combined events. I could see that happening in the next few years, and I think that would be mental but brilliant, having the amalgamation of UFC and WWE fans in the same arena. I think this is the first step towards that. It's interesting they're doing an NXT pay-per-view in such a small arena. That's the bit that doesn't appeal to me massively, unless they can get more people in there, because you should get a few thousand. Well, you look at Stand and Deliver, it was 16,000-17,000. Now, I'm not saying everyone's going to be that big, but 500 people is a very small number of people to have one of NXT's biggest shows. That is odd.
Yeah, this is why I'm giving it a provisional bad. Look, I think there's some business to this, which is, I think it's the same weekend as Double or Nothing. I think it's a very busy weekend in the US in general. If WWE has decided, without saying this, scheduling-wise, this is going to be tricky, let's whack ourselves in a smaller building and let's just get through this, I can see why that's a good idea. You can only get 500 odd people in there, maybe 1,000 at a push they've applied for, but I don't think they've got the license for it. Now, it looks great. It's the best TV studio you'll ever see, but it is a TV studio.
If anyone's going to do low-key intimate really well, though, it's that NXT now. Shawn Michaels, that William Regal, all the people behind the scenes. I think you're right, and they've gone, it's going to be hard to get a big crowd for this one. So rather than have like 4,000 or 5,000, which is a disappointing draw for a premium live event for NXT, let's take that option away. Let's go with a completely different aesthetic. Let's do 500,000. Let's make it a really intimate and different feel. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I do see the business side of it, absolutely. It'd be fascinating to see what it looks like.
That's what I'm really excited for. I'm excited to see how they make it seem. Do they try and give the illusion that it's something bigger than it is? Or I don't know. And look, we saw the Performance Center absolutely rocking for NXT this week. So it can be done. I would just rather... wrestling needs big crowds, and I would just rather that was the case. But if you're going to lose your shirt on renting an arena that no one's going to come to, you might as well do it in a building you've already got. The ugly of pro wrestling, not just this...
Sorry. Can I give us one more bad?
Yes,
sorry,
please.
I meant to say this.
Do it.
I do not like, at the moment, the DIY are essentially becoming a Degeneration X tribute act. It's not working for me at all.
Yeah, and it's been a disappointing DIY reunion. DIY on the main roster.
It's never worked.
Never worked. And I don't know why.
And this one's confusing me, because you've got the right people in place and who know how to handle these two superstars. And I get the humour of R-Truth thinking they're Shawn Michaels and Triple H. That's funny, and it works for R-Truth's character. What I don't want is them leaning into it. I don't want them wearing black and green. I don't want to see Tommaso Ciampa doing the pedigree. I don't want to see these things. And anyone who's listened to this knows what a massive DIY fan I am. I absolutely adore both those men. I think they're absolute top-tier professional wrestlers and human beings. It seems they're both really great guys. This is not working for me, and I need them to... you saw Tommaso Ciampa not shaking hands with the Awesome Truth at the end, teasing a heel turn. I need them to do so. I don't want them to break up. I need them to do something for them to be serious tag team. Because at the moment, they look like a knockoff tribute act and a comedy act, and that's not who they are.
Would you send them back to NXT? Let me put it this way. If you're going to try and elevate NXT to a third brand, so it's not a demotion, but would you say, let's put these guys back where we know we've succeeded and let's have another run at them there?
I don't think so, because I think it would be seen as a failure. send, because they've been so they've done everything in NXT. They've both completed NXT, both of them. So I don't think I would, because of that. I would maybe move them across to SmackDown and get rid of, just pretend this whole degeneration thing, X thing, never happened. Let's just ignore it and go after the SmackDown tag titles, which are so beautiful. So beautiful. We haven't mentioned that. Oh my God, they're stunning. I want one. I want one of them. I'd send him over there.
We should have done this in frankly, we should have thrown out Ospreay, Danielson, all of that stuff.
For the titles.
The best thing in wrestling this week was those sexy new titles where every wrestling fan went, ooh.
Not a single person said a bad thing about them. And for that to happen in wrestling is genuinely incredible.
Sadly, the same can't be said for our ugly section this week, because we need to talk a little bit about the body shaming of Sheamus upon his return. Now, body shaming is never cool. You are all beautiful. It takes people a long time to get happy with their body. There's too much about it. What the hell are people doing having a pop at Sheamus?
Yeah, don't like it. Don't like it at all. A fair play to Sheamus. He's come out and addressed it and basically said he wasn't expecting. So he thought he was going to have to retire through neck injury. So I can promise you that with a neck injury, he will have been able to do precisely nothing for a long time. And when you're used to doing as much exercise, as much training, as much working out as these guys do, even a week of doing nothing, your body looks very different. Like, that's just how it works. So, first of all, huge credit and praise to Sheamus for deciding to come back at this time in his career. Like, he's done everything. He's got a Hall of Fame career. He is a legend of this industry. For him to decide to want to is massive. To do the work to come back. He's come out and addressed it, hasn't he? And said he didn't think he was expected back till the end of this month, start of next month. And in this industry, 3 or 4 weeks is a big amount of time for how you will look. He got the call to come back earlier. He embraced it. He did it. He wrestled brilliantly. Yes, he's not as lean as he has been in the past, but no one is always in their best shape all the time. And what that doesn't give you the right to do is say mean things about him and hurtful things about him on the internet. And I also really didn't like that they lent into it with Drew McIntyre's promo this week. I would have stayed far, far away from that. And it's, of this Paul Levesque era, it's the first big miss on the tone of something, I think. I didn't like that at all. Like, Drew teasing him about looking fat gives credence to the fans doing it. I don't like that at all.
I also think that you're appealing to that maybe 20% of your audience that is on the internet and seeing all those jokes and that bullying. I mean, you wouldn't think it's bullying a guy like him, but that's what it is, tempting to bully it. I think most of the audience watching that will see a guy who is in great shape. Was he in the shape he was in when he was in his prime? No, he didn't expect to be back. He wasn't ready, but he was. I would like at some point in my life to be what people are calling Sheamus fat. Like, if that is out of shape.
You and me both, mate. You and me both.
And that's the problem. I think they drew attention to it, and men, women, whoever, struggle with body image. These people have to go out basically in their underwear every week and perform on national telly. So well done for him for the way he handled it. But let's try and be a little bit better. There will be times where, you know, we were saying about The Rock, is he going to blow up at, you know, and I guess people say, are you being hypocritical? I'd like to think when we talk about these things, we're not talking about it in a shameful way, in the way that people are trying to shame Sheamus.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a difference in saying, will The Rock's body hold up injury-wise to, I think he doesn't look good. There's a difference in that conversation, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree. So look, just be nice. It's a perennial.
It's free. It's free to be nice.
And having said let's be nice, let's do the part of the podcast where we're
mean about something.
We talk about stuff we ate. Only the fusion back to developmental. Right, first or second for you this week? What are you going to do?
I'll go second this week. I always go first. I'm going to not barge in this week.
Okay, I think my back to developmental isn't mean to anyone, but it's more to a species, and I think everyone can agree with this. You know, there are sometimes you go outside and birds have just done a real number on your car. I'm living in Cornwall, the seagulls and herring gulls, there are just some places where, and I went outside and it was like my car had been papier-mâchéed without getting too graphic. And you just think, is this one bird? Is it a flock of birds? How has this happened? So just when that happens to your car, that's my back to developmental.
I've been pooed on by a bird 4 times in the last year. And before that, I never had been. But from the moment I moved to Australia, which was just over a year ago, Four times. Once every 3 months. That's too often.
Were the poos happening in Australia?
Two in Australia and two since I've been back.
Was the Australian poos noticeably different to the UK?
No, no, no. It's not okay, is it? I mean, it never happened to me before, but then four in the last year. I got to 28 years old and never had it happen, and then four in a year.
Yeah, that's... I mean, I was going to say that's unusual, but then I suspect the moment I go out the door today, I will be hit by it.
And here's something I didn't think I'd be thinking about on a podcast, talking about on a podcast today.
Okay, would you rather...
Oh, God.
...be pooped on by a bird...
Yes.
...or splashed by a car in wet weather?
Oh, pooed by a bird, because you wipe it off and you get on with your day. Being soaked by a car, I think, can ruin your entire day. That's the sort of thing that if you're having a bad day already can genuinely tip you over the edge.
I don't know. I think you can go in and you can be like, oh, I've just been splashed by a blinking car.
But what if you've got no other dry clothes or anything? What if you're on your way to work and you've got no other dry clothes?
Yeah, but otherwise you have to sit with just a little bit of excrement from another animal.
We're on different pages here.
My earning the push, I don't know if I'm on a smell kick at the moment because it was a smell last week, but my earning the push this week is the smell of sun cream, because the sun has started coming out. And so I'm a big factor 50. I luckily don't really burn, but I'm big on sun protection. Went straight to my supermarket, bought my sun cream, putting it on. I love wearing sun cream and I love the smell of sun cream.
You're a strange man. You are a strange man. I hate sun cream. I hate it.
Why?
I have to put it everywhere. I put it all over my head. I'm ginger. I hate it. I don't like the smell of it. I'm a child about having it put on.
It smells so good. I know.
It doesn't.
What do you mean it? Okay, well...
It just doesn't.
Okay, fine. We won't argue because you'll beat me. What is yours?
My earning the push is the new Deadpool and Wolverine trailer. I'm a big, big, big superhero fan. Everyone knows this. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited for this film. And with the newest trailer, they did the perfect job of getting me even more excited without ruining any of the many surprises we were expecting there to be in this film. And I don't want to see any more of it. Disney, Marvel, don't show me any more of this film in trailers or TV spots. I want to go into this film knowing nothing, so it's all surprises. So that was really, really good, and I'm very, very excited for that film.
Deadpool is Ryan Reynolds, yes?
Yes, it is.
And Wolverine is...
Yeah, they've got Hugh Jackman back. They've got him back when he said he was retired. Wolverine's my all-time favourite superhero, I'm very excited.
You know this type of thing. Are they in... I was going to say in real life. Storyline-wise, in the comic books... Are they together normally, or have they just gone, here's a franchise, let's whack them together?
They've crossed over in comics a lot.
Right.
And Ryan Reynolds has campaigned... The Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman are very good friends in real life, and he has campaigned for a long time to have this film made, and then certain things happen, like Fox owned the rights to the X-Men before, then Disney bought them back from Marvel. There's lots of things going on in the background that meant this film couldn't happen for a long time. And then after about 10 years of people wanting it and Ryan Reynolds campaigning for it, the stars align, it's happening. So it's very exciting for us comic book nerds.
Excellent. Well, I'm all in on that. What's going back to developmental?
You're going to agree with this because we've spoken about this off air. The new format of WhatsApp.
Yeah, go on.
Online and typing now have capital letters. And I don't know why this is so triggering, but oh my God, it is. And I hate it.
It just looks wrong because...
And I haven't got used to it. I thought, that will stop annoying me in a few days. It hasn't.
Do you know what? I think it should have been capitalized the whole way. Like, that's...
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. But now it wasn't, and now it is. I can't deal with it.
No, you've made your bed. You have to like... And do you know what? I bet at WhatsApp HQ, I bet there's a bunch of really good-hearted people who are like, we'll finally put this right for them. They're going to love it. And then the next day they come in.
Change it back. Change it back now.
It earns you nothing. It gets you nothing. People hate it. And
it's the online one the most. The O just doesn't look like an O anymore.
It looks weird. When I first saw it, I was like, I'm with you. And I haven't met a single person who thinks it's right. So this is an easy win, whoever owns WhatsApp. I think it's Meta, possibly.
I think it's Zuckerberg. Yep. Zuck, as I know him. Mark Zuckerberg. Here we go. If you're listening, I know you tune in every week.
Marky Z.
Change it back.
I'll
fix my camera while you're at it.
Okay, yeah. Do you think he's the IT guy? Do you think that's what Mark...
I reckon he'd know how.
Okay, well, look, one last question for you before we wrap things up. It's obviously the draft on SmackDown. We're recording before SmackDown. Here's one for you. Excluding the champions, if you were doing a draft, who would your number one draft pick be?
Dragunov.
Really?
Oh, I love Ilya Dragunov. I know it's a me pick. It's a me pick. But he's just lost the title last night. By the way, that crowd was going mad for Trick Williams. And I would waste no time getting him in there with Gunther. You know what I'd almost do? And I can't believe I'm about to say this. I'd have him beat Gunther in the final of King of the Ring. You want to make Dragunov seem like a proper big deal straight away. Stick him in that King of the Ring tournament that everyone's just sure Gunther's going to win, and have him beat Gunther. Could you imagine?
What if he demolished Gunther? What if he did a...
Well, there's a completely different sort of thing. But I'd have him do what they did in NXT. I'd have him tap Gunther out in that chokehold he puts him in.
It's a good pick, but it's the wrong pick. Because
who would yours be?
It would have to be Logan Paul.
Well, hang on. You said excluding champions.
Oh, yeah, I did.
You're breaking your own rules here.
I went heel. I just lied about it. Okay.
But let's pretend he doesn't have the championship. I absolutely see that pick. I absolutely do. My one quandary with it is, do you get your value for money? I know you're not spending money. I know they're all in the same business because he's not there every week.
If he didn't have the title, having just mucked up my own question, yes, I would have him as my number one. I wouldn't care he wasn't there every week. I'd have him record promos from somewhere else. I wouldn't care. He's just money. So, look, we shall see. The draft is on SmackDown. Next time we're together, we'll be talking about the draft. Also, looking ahead to Backlash in Paris. Still seems odd for me to say that WWE holding a premium live event in the City of Lights, but they are. But until then, it's time for us to go. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen. He's Charlie_Beckett. I'm Jack_Merley. This has been Earning the Push. We are out of time. Enjoy your wrestling week. And until next time, thanks for listening, and bye-bye.